You are a toy! You weren't the real Buzz Lightyear, you're an action figure! You are a child's plaything!
You are a sad, strange little man.
Welcome to Percolated Media's Toy Story Retrospective Series.
Shall we play a game?
No, thank you.
Are you sure?
Join Matt.
Oh, thank goodness you're here!
Adam.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Huh. Yes.
Huh? He's posing.
And Garrett.
Stand still, Godzilla!
As they look at each film of the Toy Story franchise.
Alright, let's review this one more time.
From 1995's beloved original,
let's go home and play.
To 2022's Lightyear and beyond.
Oh, shoots and ladders.
Andy's favorite podcasters will review each Toy Story film and decide individually if the series flies or just falls with style.
Son of a building block!
So get ready to reach for the sky, podcast listeners.
Hello? Check. That better? Great. Everybody hear me?
Percolated Media's Toy Story Retrospective begins now.
All right, let's go.
Toy Story 4. Released June 21st, 2019, budget of $200 million, with a box office take of $1.07 billion, two in a row, and this was directed for the first time by Josh Cooley. Well, even though 9 years came and went seemingly like nothing, didn't stop the toys from breaking all the piggy banks at home and clocking in over a billion once again.
9 years, and we'll talk about it, but you know what? I gotta say, you know, even after the 11-year gap between 2 and 3, Matt, you and I were talking, like, this is around the time me and you got to be really good friends, was around the time this movie was getting amped up, and we were talking, we were like, how are they going to do this? How are they going to make this happen? And the trailers for this did nothing for me, so I was not excited for this one.
Well, I gotta talk about the trailer, because that was my first acknowledgement that this was actually happening. I was in Disney Hollywood Studios in Florida at the time. They had just built the Toy Story section of the park, and we were in line for Slinky's Dog Dash, and there was a clip playing on the television in the waiting queue of all the toys, like, in a circle. They're playing both sides now, and I'm thinking it's something for the ride to kind of get you in the mood and build up ambiance, so to speak. And I saw the spork come into frame, and they all fall. I thought the spork, to be proper, was part of the ride experience. And then out of nowhere, the words Toy Story 4 come up, and I said, one, I was flabbergasted they were actually doing it, and number two, I said, okay, they're officially out of ideas. You bring the gang back together, and your new creation is literally a spork that I could pick up at CVS.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, too, is with Pixar, it's really delicate. You have to be careful with the Toy Story franchise, because I get that you had Cars and you had so many others that you were piggybacking on, but Toy Story is kind of a treasured commodity. But Disney has proven, and at this point they had proven it with Star Wars, that, you know what, we're just going to keep doing them until people stop coming. As soon as this was announced, I thought, you could not close it any better with Toy Story 3, and now you're bringing them back. And again, the trailers were like, oh my God, what are we getting into here?
All right, Adam, you were the person who got the most emotional at the end of Toy Story 3. So I want to know, when you heard that this was coming down the pipe, did you feel sort of betrayed that they were making another one after what really struck a chord with you and certainly plenty of other people?
Nope, I was excited for this. The reason was, back in 2010, I wasn't a big fan of Toy Story 3. I didn't think it was all that good, and it didn't resonate for me when I had first seen it. It does now amazingly, but I was hoping to get a movie that would feel like a better capper to these toys. It's amazing how times have changed. So I thought it was a good idea. I wasn't overly surprised. And much like you, we had visited the new Toy Story Land. God, I love that Slinky Dog coaster. The land needs work. That Slinky Dog coaster is great. So I was excited. I was happy, and I was surprised it took so long. But after knowing the massive success of Toy Story 3, I can't say I was surprised. But the marketing, I think, was some of Pixar's absolute worst. And it might be their worst marketing up until that point. Because focusing on Forky in the trailer and what they sold the movie as compared to what the movie is are quite different. And I was excited, and the family was excited. This was a theater watch for us the year before the world went to shit. But God, the marketing and movie could not, to me, play more differently.
I definitely think there was a disconnect between what the movie was being sold as versus what the movie was actually about. Maybe that was intentional, but I think the marketing in general was a big reason why I could not bring myself to care. And more importantly, I just felt, me personally, that my interest had evaporated in a Toy Story 4. And a lot of that was because I thought Pixar, around this period, was doing some of their best work with original movies. Stuff like Inside Out and Coco, I thought were both just not only some of the best animated films we've gotten this century, but I would argue some of the best storytelling we've gotten in any form of narrative media. So going back to this, at a time where I didn't feel like Disney needed the money. I mean, this was a movie that made over $1 billion, and it was still the eighth highest grossing movie of 2019.
But they did have The Good Dinosaur 4 years before. So
they did, and they also had Cars 3, which didn't do as well as the previous two. Although if you forced me to watch one, Clockwork Orange style, I'd probably pick the third one. I didn't really care for any of the Cars movies, but apparently this, as you alluded to, Garrett, development began very shortly after 3. Granted, at the time when they started to put this together, John Lasseter, who had done the first two, he was scheduled to come back and direct this.
Yeah, here's the weird thing about this whole thing. I think John Lasseter felt a little betrayed by the fact that Toy Story 3 ended up getting a lot of Oscar attention and a lot of good word of mouth. I think he was angry at that, and he wasn't a huge part of it. So he was determined. I think a lot of this is spearheaded by him. He was determined to come back and make this into a love story. The envy of Lasseter not being involved with 3 is kind of what got this going.
And his involvement obviously went to less than zero, given the dark secrets that came to light, not to get into that, because Lord knows on At Pupil, we've talked about that plenty. So once his departure was made official, they then said that it was going to be co-directed by two separate people. And then from there, they brought in, let's say, it took 5 years for them to even announce it at D23 Expo. Because that's when Lasseter was still involved. He said, yep, it's going to be a love story. And then Lasseter got replaced in 2016. And then from there, the story basically got reconceived, which, to this franchise's credit, that has not been an obstacle they've been incapable of overcoming. And one of the reasons why, if you're a pessimist like me, there are 8 people on this who have a story by credit.
Yep.
Which is one of the largest fields I've seen, including someone of note, Rashida Jones, who most people know from Parks and Rec and Andrew Tribeca. She had a pretty big hand to this at one point, and then she and McCormick, who was one of the people she was working with, they both withdrew.
I don't think any of what she did ended up in this movie. I think she got a story by credit by name only, and maybe it was by contract.
I don't know the fullest extent, but Adam, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it may be more tone and direction, but she was supposed to be the spearhead of this. I mean, the director in animation is always kind of weird because it's not like a movie. You have so many different departments working independent, but this was her story. It was supposed to be a more female driven, which makes sense since we've transitioned to Bonnie from Andy. And I think you see it in the substance and the shift, but I think specifics, that's why you get story by and not screenplay or words or any of that kind of stuff. But it's, I think you can see where it was going.
Well, I wonder if the Bo Peep reinsertion was her idea.
No, that was Lasseter, from what I
know. Yeah. But my part of my brain, because it's not just her, you have the Gabby Gabby character, you have certainly more like prominent, and you know, the main kid in this is a girl now. But the Bo Peep inclusion was weird to me because it's such an offhanded line explaining why she's not there in 3, and then to all of a sudden make her the focal, kind of the co-focal point of this, I found to be very strange, in large part because I didn't miss her in 3. And she was never a major character in the first 2. Like, she doesn't go with them in 2 to go rescue Woody. So this kind of, to me, felt like the, I'm going to say this one time and then I'll let it be, this felt like the Kathleen Kennedyization of Toy Story.
I don't know. It felt like a story that people were upset over the fact that she was not in part 3. I do remember a little bit of chatter about that. I think this was something that was in the back of their mind and they felt the need to close the gap. And I want to say this right now, boys. I think the fact that Woody rides off into the sunset in this is no coincidence. I think this is a little bit of them telling John Lasseter, go do other things. We have this under control. And the only way they could do that is to bring Bo Peep back. And that's the only way they could convince Woody to go. That's the only reason I could think of to put her in this movie and to make her this focal point.
I think she replaces, she got the shaft last movie because Mattel decided Barbie was going to be everywhere in that movie. And they were. And I thought it was to the detriment of that entire scene. Like, they over-Barbie-fied it after, you know, pulling the Eminem E.T. shit from just staying out. And I think they went too far. And Barbie's barely in this one. And I don't know if it's Mattel demanding more money or getting too big for their britches. But I think it feels more like a proper course correction than anything else. And yeah, I do think people are like, hey, what happened to Pete? The story was sweet with Woody and what happened, but we'll get into it. I think this movie shifts its focus on and what these toys represent. I think it's a big shift. At least for me, when I watched this movie, I went, oh, now I get it.
Over-barbified. Wonderful word, sir.
TM.
And at the same time, I was doing some digging, and it basically sounds like the screenplay was written, 3/4 of it were done, that were subsequently rewritten. You had Andrew Stanton come in, yep, who co-wrote this. A lot of hands and a lot of pens were at work. And honestly, like I said at the beginning, when we finally started seeing full-length trailers and some more of the marketing, seeing a couple of the new characters, it wasn't doing anything to rekindle my interest as someone who really likes all 3 movies. And I couldn't just blame it on me being a 25-year-old cynical asshole at the time. I couldn't put my finger on what was it about this movie that wasn't gripping me.
Yeah, Matt, if me and you were not doing the podcast we were doing at the time, I would not have seen this in theaters either. You're absolutely right. The marketing for this did nothing for me as well.
Agreed, but I will say that I had, let me do the math. So I would have had an 11-year-old and a 8-year-old at the time. They both wanted Forky products. And I was rolling my eyes, but they wanted Forky.
Yeah, let's see. This was 2019, so I wasn't, Riker wasn't born yet. So I still had some time on the runway. But, I went to go see this in large part. I would have got to it eventually. Like, I would not have done like the whole, I refuse to go see this movie. But it was the critical reviews that were saying, they've done it again. That's basically all the sequels. That should be the subhead of every review. Toy Story's done it again.
Yeah, and that's why when I look at 5, I'm thinking, God damn, I'm not going to be as cynical when it comes to 5. Because, yeah, even 4, when it was released, everybody, like us, Matt, we were saying, God damn, why do it again after a great trilogy that you have just completed? Well, critics were saying, you're absolutely right. They were saying, yep, they've done it again. It's as good, if not better, than what you've seen before. So the word of mouth, even if I didn't have to do that podcast, was pretty big.
Yeah, it was kind of astounding that those initial reactions. Now, I've talked to some people that I know in that preview industry in the way if they write about it and stuff. And the full court press that you are given when you're taken to these screenings, the rose-colored glasses are massive when you walk out and write your initial pieces. And I've talked to so many people who say, it's amazing when I can look back on something just a few weeks later and go, man, I was caught up in selling this movie for them.
Shit, a few days later, I've been in those as well.
Well, it doesn't help. It's hard to be fully, down the playing field when you're getting gifts and gift baskets at these screenings and you're rubbing elbows with people who are involved, so you don't really want to upset people. I know it's a tightrope to cross, but I can see how a lot of people don't want to do a Duke Kaboom thing and go down the runway full speed and be that contrarian opinion, unless you're Quentin Tarantino, who infamously shit on this movie not having seen it.
Well, he had one coming out that year as well.
The perfect end of the trilogy, and there's no need to do another one. It's redundant. Meanwhile, he's talking about making a sequel to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which has now actually come to pass. So, wow, Tarantino actually followed through in an idea he's incessantly talked about. First time I've heard that before.
Yeah, the feeling going into the very first screening of Fantastic was much different than coming out of it. And that's just the preview I'm going to leave until we get to that film.
Well, speaking of talking, we did review this back in the day. And part of our conversation, I remember it clear as day, was talking about the marketing that Child's Play was doing at this movie's expense. You had Slinky Dog being roasted over a fire by Chucky. You had Ham being busted open with a hammer. You had Woody being like stepped on. I feel like the movie kind of got additional press because another movie was literally taking the legs out from underneath it.
Yes, and you and I were passing those memes back and forth when those posters were being done. Yeah, I remember that as well. I agree. I think it did kind of add to the marketing of this, the viral marketing that Child's Play did.
And it was great because what they did is they out Toy Story Toy Story.
Yes.
Toy Story used to do a thing where they'd put themselves in classic ad, you know, like movie posters. So good for the goose, good for the gander. And it worked gangbusters for both.
Yeah, they both made a lot of money.
I have not rewatched this since we did the original review. Same. This was my second time watching it.
Same here. I have not rewatched it as well. I think I watched it once, maybe twice in theaters the first time we reviewed this. But yeah, I have not watched it since 2019.
I think this is my fourth, maybe fifth time. We watched it in theaters. I bought the Blu-ray because I had to complete the set. Because as I talked before, I have that set of 1, 2, and 3. I know I've watched it at least once since then, and maybe when we launched Disney Plus as well. So yeah, this is 4, maybe 5.
Well, but I'll say this more time, than Garrett and I combined.
Yeah,
but I'll say you could ask my wife, who had to hear me talk aloud while I was taking notes. As many times as I've seen it, this movie broke some new revelations for me this time I watched it, and we'll discuss that as we go. But yep, I've definitely seen this the most.
Now, Matt, clear up for me, who is Josh Cooley? Because when I'm looking at this movie and I'm seeing him being the sole credited director, didn't he work on a few of those shorts and that's it?
Well, initially, he got his start at Pixar. He was doing storyboard work for like The Incredibles, like that, mid-2000s. He did a short film, and then he worked as a screenwriter on Inside Out, which got a lot of press and is, I still think, one of the best scripts they've ever written.
Yep.
He got the job from that. And this is the second time we talked about him on this network because he directed Transformers 1.
Oh, did he? That was him? I didn't realize that was him.
He directed
Transformers O-N-E, not Transformers the first.
Oh, just stop. Stop.
Well, people may wonder that they're like, no, he didn't direct Transformers.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
He's been waiting all day to say that.
I didn't realize that was the same director.
I mean, that was 5 years after this, but you know, I don't think this is someone where let's just get the IT to come in and direct this because we need to put it out in theaters. He did have somewhat of a track record, and that was Pixar's MO for a long time. They hired internally from promoting within, so that was kind of going back to formula for Pixar. Okay. As is the very notion of making a Toy Story 4 would indicate.
Yeah, I mean, look, we had Lee Unkrich last week. This is what they do. They take people, they get them, they start them from the ground up, and they get opportunities like this. So they're following a formula.
They are, and it's moved on from past Pixar. This is the way, finally, Disney Animation does things. You look at the executives now that run Walt Disney Animation, and they were the creators behind Frozen, and they started as the same way, just working their way up through and to leading it. So Pixar has always had that in-house mentality. And it's been great to see because I think we've gotten some amazing works out of people like Stanton and Bird and some of those folks because of it. So it's, as much as some of these names, I'm always like, who? When you realize it, it's what gives me faith in Pixar as a brand.
And what's weird is when this came out, I do remember it made a little over 115, right? Its first weekend, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember people saying, you know what, I don't know if people are really going to this. And I'm thinking, wait a second, we're right at that fucking Avatar 3 conversation all over again. Just because it didn't make as much as the previous Pixar movie, which was Incredibles 2, why are you all of a sudden saying, you know what, I don't think people are wanting more Toy Story? This thing made over $1 billion. It blows my mind when people start talking like that.
Probably another 800 million in toys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you look at the split, it's almost 50-50. It was 434 here in the US and Canada, and a little over 600 million in other parts of the world. So it wasn't one of those things like the Transformers movies, like the sequel, the last couple of sequels, where China really inflates the total. Mm-hmm. So I do think that it showed there was a demand for it. And Pixar, to their credit, and Disney, ever since they've owned Toy Story, they've been good about not letting it sit in the shelf for too long, you know, integrating it into their parks. We should talk about after 3, they did a couple of shorts that were like 30 to 60 minutes. They did like Toy Story of Terror, Toy Story that Time Forgot, to kind of keep the IP in the minds of people until they got a feature film.
And I watched them, actually, in the lead up to this. I did actually watch them, and I'm sad I didn't watch them before. They're pretty fun.
Good. They're dang good, especially those two. Toy mm-hmm. Story of Terror and Toy Story that Time Forgot are quality.
I mean, you're not bringing the A-listers back, obviously, for them, but it's still fun to see the characters and see everybody together again.
Oh, but it's like a prep and landing that Disney does for their for their Christmas time. Like, these are just underrated little gems.
And speaking of underrated, the movie opens with the... Is this the first one that opens with the Disney castle logo first?
Yes, and I was struck by that this time. I did not remember that.
And if you're, you know, if you're cynical like I was at the time, you're kind of, I crossed my leg a bit going, I hope this isn't a harbinger of things to come. But you see the Pixar lamp logo, which they actually integrate into the opening scene because it's a spotlight outdoors mm-hmm. in the rain. And we see the words 9 years ago. And in my head, I said, you gave Andy such a good send-off. I don't care if he's a kid in this once again. I didn't want to go back to this well, but it was inevitable given the story they're telling.
Exactly. We had to see why Bo Peep wasn't in Toy Story 3. So in that way, I think it's a big oops by them thinking, okay, we didn't explain this, so let's explain why she wasn't in the previous one. And you know what, man? I gotta say, I did not remember this thing opening the way it does. I did not remember all this rain, all this grass. This is the equivalent of them taking their dicks and placing them on the table saying, look what we can do now. This is incredible, guys. I did not remember this.
It's a beautiful woman walking up to you, but it's also kind of empty-headed. So it looks amazing. The technology, the workmanship, the craft that's put into it is great. But at the same time, 9 years ago, okay, well, Toy Story 3 was 9 years ago. I get what you're doing. Do I need a Bo Peep prequel to start this out? This is also one of the ones that didn't have a short. So you think this is the short before the movie, but no, it's the actual movie. I don't know if I like this choice. And no, I'm going to say I don't like this choice to open it, especially because the way that Woody and Bo Peep look here, they don't look this way through the rest of the film. So it's inconsistent. It's like this was made by a different team that make the rest of the film. It looks beautiful, but it goes on a little too long, even though it's only like 7 minutes. You could have had her do this in a 2 minute drop later in the movie, but I guess you got to hit that hour 40 runtime. It looks beautiful, but that's it.
I completely disagree with you. I think this serves two purposes. One, it is to explain why Bo Peep's gone. And I think this conversation underneath the car is amazing. I love the fact that Hanks and Annie Potts were in the studio together recording their lines. So everything feels so personal. Two, we are starting with this rain, whereas every other Toy Story has started with blue skies and clouds. This is a completely different story that we are setting up. And you need to have this scene to set up the end of this film. I think this is amazing, actually. I really like the way this starts.
So my opinion on this is kind of conflated between both of you. I would just take this whole sequence and put it in the middle of the movie when Bo Peep finally gets introduced. Because it's kind of a false start, because it's this, and then it's the montage of Andy growing up again, and then we cut the present day. I just think chronologically it's not as effective as it could be. And to the point I just said, it feels a bit like a false start, not just because there's a race car that's about to be swept away in a drain pipe.
I think they probably had trouble trying to figure out how to open the film, because when you realize it's 9 years, that means if you're watching this movie at 15, you were maybe 6 when you saw the last one, you got to reintroduce what happened. But starting off with a montage would be a little strange, so you got to do something beforehand.
But to talk about what actually happens, we see Woody and the gang try to rescue RC car from being swept away. in a rainstorm. And to the credit of the animation, it's amazing how they make all these toys move differently because they're all made out of different materials. So you have mm-hmm. some that are ceramic, you have some that are porcelain, you have plush dolls, you have the Barbies, which are like plastic, and they all move like they should. And I've always mm-hmm. complimented the attention to detail that these movies have with the animation. This one continues it. And they've gotten even better since 3, which is a testament how far technology can advance when you think it's perfected. The way light shines when they get wet, and the different lighting techniques that they use, like, this is the best looking of the four, and I recommend you going to the theater to see this. It still looks great on TV, but like, I remember seeing this in the theater going, wow, they really have perfected this tech.
It's almost photorealistic, right? And you want to keep the animation aspect of this true, right? You don't want to feel like you're watching an actual movie and see actors replaced. But at the same time, the way they can get so good with the wet effects and everything else, and like you said, Matt, the way light changes when the water hits their face and all of that, this is pretty amazing what they can do. I will say, though, I don't think this is the advancement in technology the way between 2 and 3 was. It is advanced, but not as advanced as we saw from 2 to 3.
Or even 1 to 2.
Yeah.
They rescue RC car, but then they all have to play dead, so to speak, because someone comes to pick up Andy's sister's lamp, but they also take Bo. So they try to rescue her, and she tells him, it's okay, like, it's time for me to go to the next kid. And in a lot of ways, now, we've gotten very existential with these three movies because of what they talk about. I kind of read this as sort of going into the afterlife.
I read it as retirement. I read it as grandparents, because we're going to see throughout the course of this film. I realized in watching it in such close proximity as the three of us have been watching them, I did not realize that we've never seen them say, oh, we have a kid, or I have a kid. We're seeing that in this movie. We're going to hear it said a lot in the course of this film. I think this is retirement. I think this is grandparents, because we're going to see Woody kind of take a grandpa role when we get to Porky later on. I do see this as retirement.
I also read it as, in these movies, they always talk about being owned and being played with. Now the toys are taking ownership of their kids. Mm-hmm. And they talk about them the way that the kids talk about the toys. I like that shift in perspective, all things considered. And I thought, as a betting man, it kind of plays its hand, given how this movie ends. I kind of put that this is where they were going to go. Like, it was going to be Woody, if not going to another kid, because I don't think he would have gone to a third, being somewhere else in life. Like, I knew there was going to be some kind of full breakup in this movie.
Well, this is the choice, right? He is given this choice at the very beginning of this film, and this is setting up the choice he makes at the end. So in looking at it like that, I do really like how this starts and the conversation that he has with her, in that he's going to remain loyal to Andy, but she's like, he doesn't need you anymore. And that's the struggle that he has in this. And I think all of this works really well.
Well, what does not work well for me is recycling the "you've got a friend in me"
and replaying. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And replaying the ending of 3, I found this to be, like, you've already hooked me. You don't need to go back to this well again. I can't imagine anyone walking into this movie not having seen the previous 3.
Yeah, I agree with you. This was, I am a little sick of A Friend in Me, and we're seeing it yet again here. I did not remember this. I did not remember them just redoing the end of 3. Yeah, I'm with you, Matt. This was not needed.
Adam, did this bother you?
Well, because I've seen it and I know it, I understand it's been 9 years between. So, I mean, you're going to sell this on "you've got a friend in me." I don't need it. I think every kid that's in here watching it needs this to happen.
The only part I like is that you still see, like, after Bonnie was given the toys by Andy, she plays with them still, even before mm-hmm. you cut to the jump. Andy made the right decision, so to speak. That, like, he chose a kid who would actually respect the toys and play with them all. Although we cut to present day and they're all stuck in the closet just waiting to be played with again.
I was going to say, no, he doesn't, because now Woody has dust bunnies.
Well, everyone else gets played with except for Woody, as we'll see.
Yeah, like, did Andy really make the right... Like, if Andy came to see Bonnie and say, okay, how are my toys doing? Would he really be happy with the fact that his favorite toy is now just kind of gathering dust?
Yeah, but then she could say, oh, you giant hypocrite, as if she talked like this as a 5-year-old. When Buzz came along, you threw Woody down literally off the bed.
Kind of like what this movie does.
They had to ring Andy's cell phone in part 3 to get him to even look at him.
Yeah.
But we see Bonnie again. I like that we're having a kid who's still creative, coming up with scenarios. And then she takes the sheriff badge off Woody and puts it on Jesse. That's like the kiss of death, that your days are numbered, cowboy.
Every white male reviewer decided to start stabbing their pad and throwing a hissy fit.
Oh, they were already starting that when they heard that Bonnie was going to be the centerpiece of this. I remember those freaking messages very well. You know what? I'm going to say... Well, I'm going to save it, because they could do something with the Jesse character that, goddamn, it's a missed opportunity, and this sets that up. But I'll save it for when we get there.
I like that they do this. It shows the passage. It shows Bonnie. I mean, she's not completely discrediting Woody, but she's focused on the toy she's focused on, and I dig it. And I like that she's playing with something she's more interactive with. I like that Barbie is left out of this, because that would have been the easy way to go, to have the girl toy with the girl toy. I dig it, but you could see the existential crisis that's coming up.
Right. And I like sort of it's a take on what Andy did in the first movie with like a Western, like you got a banker, you got, she's playing with both sets of toys. Like she's found a way to still play with hers, but find a place for Andy's. Because when we see them interacting with each other, Woody's kind of forcefully trying to make himself the leader, even though the Bonnie Hunt doll kind of runs the ship because it's Bonnie's house. Like Woody, even in this movie, like he's kind of back to the first one where you think he's being a little bit too pushy, to the point where they kind of tell him to F off, so to speak. And he gets stuck in the closet with, I couldn't believe, when I'm listening to these other toys, you know, it's the chair, the elephant. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's Mel Brooks, because I recognize that voice anywhere. And it's Melephant Brooks, which made me laugh.
Me too.
You have Cheryl Burnett. Betty White's one of them. And Carl Reiner. Like, the fact they got these legends to play the, like, previous generation of toys, I thought this was a very warm-hearted set of cameos.
I agree, and again, it's setting up retirement, isn't it? All of these people, they've been in the stratosphere for years and years and years, but now it's like, well, it's not that we don't like you, it's the fact that we've moved on. There are other things, and I think that's the kind of the theme of this film, and they're playing with it with these cameos, and I agree. Carl Rhinoceros, or whatever he is, like, this is all fun stuff. I'd forgotten about these cameos.
Yeah, Woody's stuck in the closet playing solitaire, and they joke, oh, you got your first dust bunny on you, which is basically the equivalent of getting, like, gray hair.
Yep.
And they're just kind of, like, fucking with him for all intents and purposes, because the toys have a leader, and as we see, Bonnie is absolutely terrified about starting kindergarten, which any parent can understand this, God, watching this movie now again. After all these years, I'm like, oh, God, I've lived this very recently. Road trip included. I got to say, this one, watching this, not only like with what's happened since this came out, but watching this for the first, what felt like the first time with my family, hit a way I was not expecting.
Okay, you two dads, I got to know, I don't remember kindergarten. Is there an orientation? And then you have like...
Okay, I was going to talk about this. I have a note. So orientation is typically, at least when Riker did it, it was before the school year even started. It's like they confused orientation with the first day of kindergarten.
Okay.
Normally it's like you go, you tour, you meet who's going to be the teacher, you see the school, but you don't really sit and have a full, like, it's almost like she has a full day at the kindergarten. At most, they would have you, like, make an activity like they do with her making Forky, a craft of some kind. But I've never heard of an orientation basically being treated like the first day of kindergarten.
Oh, no. It felt more like when you go and you tour different preschools and audition and decide where you're going. Like, that's what it felt like. It didn't feel like kindergarten.
Yeah, it did. And that, like, crippling anxiety of meeting a new group of friends. And, you know, in the last film we saw at the daycare center where she'd go, she was still very introverted. And I felt so bad for her when that boy walked over and knocked all of her shit into the trash. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, that plays, because little boys at kindergarten are just assholes who think everything is theirs.
Definitely. I do remember being just disheartened when I see my mom leave after holding my hand to walk me to class, and then she leaves me, and I'm all by myself. And I do like how Woody's determined to be that one who is going to get her through it, right? This plays up on that anxiety so well, and I respected the way they handled this.
And Woody sneaks into her backpack to provide moral support, even though everyone's telling him, like, she's got to do this herself. So it's interesting that they make Woody, he does, in a lot of ways, he does the right things, but he's still rebellious. So you're not, again, it's a lot like the the first one. And I think this movie, not only does it function as another sequel, like this didn't feel as superfluous as I thought it would, it's kind of an amalgam of the previous three films combined.
I agree with that, but here's the problem, and I feel like I bring this up every single one of these podcasts, but does it feel like this one more than any kind of plays with the conventions of playing dead before all the humans get back into the room? There are times in this movie where they are moving almost in front of the human, and like they are really walking that line here, and there are a few times where I'm like, okay, these humans are going to catch them, which they don't, but it's just funny how these conventions just keep getting more and more. I wonder how Five is going to handle this. I wonder how Five is going to handle humans not catching these toys in the action.
Also, yeah, apparently this is a world. I was just going to say this is a world where 2020 vision does not exist. Apparently,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they're starting to play a little fast and loose with the rules they set up for themselves.
And speaking of rules, we always talked about what makes a toy come to life. Like, is it the factory they're made in? Is it a child's imagination? As we prove in this movie, these kids are basically God because they create toys literally with their hands, and then they're brought to sentient life with Forky just coming to life in a way that this is like the child's version of like David Cronenberg body horror. Because this is basically like Frankenstein for kids, where it's like, what is my purpose? I didn't ask to be made. I view myself as garbage. Because I hated this in the marketing. I was like, this is such a... I thought beneath Pixar, but I love Forky in this movie, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
Okay. So, first of all, I thought of Mr. Big. Adam, remember Mr. Big from Saturday Night Live?
Oh my God, I was thinking Sex and the City. What the hell?
I was dreading this character coming into this because, like you, Matt, I was scared by the marketing of this. I'm thinking, God damn. To me, this character feels like a drunken day in the writer's room where pot was being passed around and they're like, watch us make this spork become a sought-after item. We can sell anything. And this is the result of that meeting. And you know what? God damn, I am right with you, man. I love this character. Now, they do overplay it a bit. You know, him coming from the trash and him keeping still going to the trash, that gets overplayed. But it doesn't last as long as I was thinking it would. And I think it's played a little overboard. But still, I have a blast with Forky.
I was expecting to go back into this absolutely dreading Forky. And I was trying to remember. I hate the marketing for Forky. Every trailer, every TV spot, the way that they do it, I can't stand it. Watching the creative mind of a child bring Forky to life, and that he is nowhere near in this movie. One, he's not the focus, and he's used sparingly and correctly, is nowhere as ostentatious as I thought it was going to be. I like Forky. I don't love Forky. I don't need Forky. I kind of can't stand the very end, but I dig it. And I think this shows what we get later on, because this makes the toys a grandparent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Woody's here to do his job. You know what? That's me. I'm here to do my job for my kids. Woody's about to have the realization that he did his job and the kids are going off. And what does that mean for you? I didn't understand that 9 years ago. Shit, I didn't understand that 7 years ago. Guess what? I really understand that today. And I realize that this is not about toys. This is about your kids have grown up. You did your job. What are you now?
Yeah, Forky and eventually becomes the MacGuffin of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has to be rescued in the third mm-hmm. act. And he's the most important thing to Bonnie, as we'll find out. But mm-hmm. I also read this as, you know, because there's so many different levels you can look at these movies. I also read this as grandparents who wind up raising kids that yep. are not their own.
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely. As somebody who was partially raised by grandparents, that hit me too.
Likewise. So, you know, that's something I really responded to. And also, we're teaching, or I should say, accommodating and caring for kids who have special needs. I looked at mm-hmm, that as well, mm-hmm. or helping people through like an existential crisis, you know, people who were suicidal and having to help them refine purpose in life, which is not what I was expecting from the marketing, because they really didn't give that like what his whole deal was outside of just coming to life because of her imagination.
Yeah. And Tony Hale, I have to say, voices this perfectly. Every time he goes, trash, I warm up to Forky. It's just fun stuff. And again, they just walk that line so well.
I was trying to remember who it was, and for about 20 minutes, I thought it was John Mulvaney, and I'm like, no,
John Mulaney,
it's not quite as high-pitched, but I do think he does a good job. Yeah, absolutely. But I do think this thing was probably, like Forky, I think this thing was crafted masterfully in the editing room.
You know, Woody takes Forky back to the room and tells everyone Bonnie literally made a new friend, to which everyone is freaked out. And saying, like, I have all the questions, which is one of my favorite lines in the movie.
Yes.
Because you can't explain it. Woody's like, it just happened, and now we have to welcome him into our circle and make sure that, like, if anything happens to him, we're all screwed. Which this is made harder by the fact he keeps trying to jump into the trash.
This makes Bonnie one of the engineers from Prometheus, right? Or what does Bonnie need with a spaceship?
Oh, yeah. Well, there is a lot of, like, kids are clearly portrayed as gods in this movie because they can create sentient life out of nothing. But now, all right, we find out the big crux of this movie, and this did annoy me, is it's a road trip movie, which always to me comes off as we don't have an idea for how to get from A to B and have crazy stuff happen. So we're just going to get in an RV and go across the country. When I heard this, I kind of went, oh.
Well, yeah, that was the weird jump, right? We go from orientation to a fucking road trip. And I did the same thing. I kind of did a head tilt like, what? This is what we're going with? But it seems like all Toy Story movies are road movies, aren't they?
Well, they're limited in geographical space, but they feel bigger than they are because they take advantage of perspective. Like in the second one, the rescue mission, they say it's like 10 blocks, but for toys, that's like a 2-day journey. The daycare center feels gigantic in three, and they go to the landfill. Like they go to a lot of locations. This one, despite being a road trip, it's the carnival, it's the antique store, and that's basically it.
Yep. The animators of Pixar went to downtown Davis, which is about 60 miles away from Emeryville, because I know this main street and I know this festival. Oh, God, this is, yeah. I mean, it's, I know where they are. I know what they're going for. Being that the adults are given, they're given way more to do. And I got to say, I don't like it. I need less adults. I need less humans in the Toy Story movies. Mentioned it before, you know, in that first one, I feel like it's almost like peanuts in the way that they're treated. I get that you can animate them better, but I don't want it.
Well, I don't have problems with the parents until we get to the third act.
Yeah.
That I have made.
Yes.
Major issues when we get there. Yes. But what I did not need also was a song that Randy Newman sounds like he shit out of his ass on a Saturday afternoon. This is horrendous.
This felt like Randy Newman also saying goodbye to the series. We're not going to have Woody at the end of this movie. We're not going to have Randy Newman. I don't think we're going to have him in Toy Story 5. I think this is him saying goodbye. And yeah, I'm with you. I haven't liked Randy Newman since the beginning, though, unlike you guys. I am not a big fan of his songs in the series. And yeah, this was crap.
You know what? I just realized I completely missed the opportunity for Toy Story 2 to make a Randy Newman and Newman joke. So I'm going to put that in retroactively with Al's Toy Barn. Damn it. Yeah, I'm surprised this wasn't made during COVID time because Randy Newman is phoning this in. This is, did they use AI and just decide to, this is as uninspired as freaking that, what is it? The Last Dinosaur that they did, The Lost Dinosaur, whatever. Oh God, I saw that once.
The Good Dinosaur. None of us can say that name.
The failed dinosaur Pixar movie. How about that? That's how uninspired this thing is.
Yeah, it's called The Land Before Irrelevancy. Jurassic Extinction. Thank you. But we see that Forky is routinely trying to throw himself away on this road trip. And if you don't know that, Randy Newman will drum that into your fucking head.
This is when I feel Forky being a little overplayed is this year.
But luckily after this scene, like after he throws himself out the RV, they stop doing that in large. But not before we actually have a conversation between Woody and Buzz. It's like the first time they've actually talked to each other.
The first time Buzz has talked.
Yeah. He tells him, like, I don't know. This was so much easier when Andy was a kid. And they acknowledge, yeah, that's right. Buzz wasn't there when Andy was, like, really young. And he tells him to listen to his inner voice. And we've talked about the last movie, how they kind of didn't have much to do with Buzz beyond either reverting him back to his previous state or just making him another, you know, the Space Ranger all over again. It's a good thing he keeps pressing that button because he is very one note in this movie for 99%.
He is, but he was written to be more included. They downplayed that. I'm going to say Buzz does not play a huge role in this movie. However, I think he has a moment in this that could only come from Buzz. And the reason why it works is because it comes from Buzz. But yeah, for the most part, he is once again kind of put in the background. We're not having him go to Spanish mode or anything in this. He's just kind of there.
This is the problem when you get to the fourth movie in a franchise and you've decided not to get rid of any of your characters. Everybody is here and you're adding more. And then the ones you added last time, you're going to add more on top of it. This thing is on a road trip, but it doesn't have enough road to give everybody something to do. I mean, and some of the other toys, they get, I know everybody got into the booth. They might as well have only recorded for one day because that's all that you would have needed for the few amount of lines some of them get.
Which is weird to say about a movie that has an abundance of additional characters as well. You'd think the main ones would have a bigger role.
And I get that maybe they just didn't have the stones, that Bonnie didn't bring everybody on this trip, or that they didn't all come along. I think maybe what would happen if they just didn't bring everybody, you know, but I know that Tim Allen talked about how this, he has a hard time watching this, that he gets really emotional in the booth. And I was like, great for the 20 minutes you were in the booth. But I got to say, him hitting that button to talk to himself, that shit gets old really fast. I could not stand what they do with Buzz until the end.
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same boat. And it's also the problem of now they have too many characters. And because of that, they're all stuck in the RV. Like, it's also one of the things to where the last movie and two, they gave all the other characters like moments. Like, they do stuff with Potato Head. Ham has really funny lines. They use Slinky to like rescue RC at the beginning. But none of them really get anything to do in this one. And I think that's very disappointing.
And I remember that being a huge part of the reviews for this too, is the fact that we have so many new characters, but the old characters have literally nothing to do. But here's the other problem, guys. We're having the old characters, the actors who play them, drop like flies throughout the course because Don Rickles passed away.
So Don Rickles passed after the third one. And granted, Pixar has, they've recast a Slinky Dog. Jim Varney passed away right after two. So they got Blake Clark, who was a friend of Varney, to come in and do it. And it's pretty close. It's not quite as grovelly. But I also understand not wanting to recast Don Rickles because he's such one of a kind. He was one of a kind. So they use like old footage, sort of like what they did with Carrie Fisher and Rise of Skywalker, where they had like old ADR lines that they just used. And he only has a couple in the movie.
But if he was around, he would have definitely played a bigger role, I feel.
Now, the one that really bothers me as far as being sort of cast aside is Jesse.
Well, yeah, I was going to get to that when we get to the scene I'm talking about.
But Forky realizes, I am done with you all, and he jumps out the RV. And apparently this spork is made out of adamantium because it doesn't shatter into a million pieces when he hits the ground. And Woody jumps out with him, to which I don't know who says it in this movie. I think it's Bonnie Hunt who keeps saying, "What is it with you people jumping out of windows?"
Great line.
Which is very true, because they all do it and none of them get hurt. But Woody, eventually he tells them like, how far is the park? Oh, it's about, you know, how far away? And he says, I'll meet you guys there. He grabs Forky, and Forky's saying, "Carry me." And he's like, "No." Because clearly he's just done.
Yeah.
He's at his, like, look, parent, grandparents, we've all been there. Anyone who's dealt with, you know, kids or even someone who has, like, ADHD, you know, it can be taxing and you don't want to deal with that routinely. But they sort of bond a little bit because he asks him, the first thing that got me is when Forky says, "Who's Andy?" He tells him a little bit and he realized that he's totally not, I don't want to say not over it, but it's still like, it's still effective when he talks about him.
If nothing you can say about Woody, we've said Woody for the most part is a really well-drawn character because he is heroic without being overly heroic, right? Like he still has moments where you think, what are you thinking, Woody? But if one thing you cannot say about him is he's not devoted. And I like that about Woody is that he doesn't refrain from what brought him to the dance, so to speak. He doesn't refrain. He is always genuine in his feelings of devotion to the human that he is given to.
Yeah, and they're joking about the last movie. He's like, oh, wait, the playroom was a space station with an idiot. And he's like, oh, my God, right. Like, they're having fun callbacks to the first movie. And he tells them that, you know, your purpose in life is to bring happiness to your kid. So Forky's kind of being, this is the burning bush telling Moses, you know,
going to church.
And as they're walking, they're just about there until Woody stumbles upon an old antique store and he sees what he believes to be the lamp. And every time I say the lamp in a Disney movie, I think of Aladdin. But they go inside and it's surprisingly well kept for being an antique store, but they run into ventriloquist dummies that run full speed at them. They move like zombies. They don't talk, which makes sense because they're ventriloquist dolls. I'm glad we got nightmare fuel again in these goddamn Pixar movies. Because these freak my kids the fuck out.
I mean, who directed this? James Wan? These feel like Dead Silence dolls.
They look like Billy. They look like Billy from Dead Silence.
I love them, though. Every time they came on screen, the way they move, right? Like, they are so off-putting. Like, the way they are awkward in their movements. I love these ventriloquist dolls. And I love the fact that they don't talk. Oh, God. These were great characters.
Absolutely horrifying. We got Monkey Shines last time. We get Dead Silence here. This is great stuff. Way to go, kids. Have your nightmares.
Yeah, it's also a nod to Goosebumps, like slappy.
Yeah, I thought of that.
And that's what I think is Goosebumps, and I think most kids would.
Yeah, especially my generation. I'll this a little bit after, but they serve a master, as we come to find out. It's Gabby taking her morning stroll, and Garrett, as a big Madman fan, did you recognize that voice right away?
Absolutely. Right off the bat, I recognized it. And I like her. I like the way Christina Hendricks does this role. I didn't think I would like her voice acting in a Toy Story movie, but I do. I think this is really good.
I haven't seen Mad Men.
Yeah.
I know Christina Hendricks.
But... Yeah, because you have the internet.
And a fetish. Or, I mean, no.
Shit.
One in the same.
Redheads.
Yeah, look up what color red hat.
Yeah.
There she has, everyone, if you don't understand that reference. And she says, oh, you're looking for Bo Peep? I'll take you to him. And one of the biggest compliments I can give this movie is they don't go the typical route of making her the villain, per se. Like, she's not evil. She's not a dictator in this. She just wants to be loved by a child.
Okay. I was wondering which angle you were coming from with this, because honestly, I don't remember our review that we did previously. And I was wondering if you're going to say, God, this feels so much like Stinky Pete. This feels so much like last week's villain. No. When we meet her, we feel that she is going to be psycho, right? Because she's surrounded by these guards. She's surrounded by these ventriloquist dummies. But no, unlike Stinky Pete, who has come to terms with the fact that he is going to be in this plastic his entire life and never be played with a child, he's fine with that. She is sticking to her guns and is not refraining from saying, if I have this voice box, I will be loved. And I love how genuine this character is. And this is to all the people who say, oh, Toy Story they all have the same villains. No, this is completely different. And I love how this character evolves in the course of this film.
All right, Mr. Instead of Lotso Huggin' Bear, he wanted to throw Lotso into an incinerator himself. Adam, what did you think of this?
I think the first glimpse or the first, you assume this is going to be Stinky Pete and Lotso all over because it kind of sets it up that way. She's not. Now, this is where I do think Rashida Jones gets full credit for so much of this. I take Gabby based on everybody else being there for their kids, raising their kids. Gabby wants a child. Gabby represents a parent who cannot, or a person, a mother, a father, what have you, that can't have their own child. And she is going to do what she can to have a child, to adopt. I think that's what Gabby is, and I never thought of that until this viewing, and it floored me. And Rashida Jones, while she was writing this, didn't have kids, was wanting to and was trying to. And I think that's Gabby. She's the parent, she's the adult who can't have kids, who wants one. And it is brilliant.
Well, I had a different read. This is an allegory for people being born with disabilities. Because she says, I came out of the factory and my voice box didn't work. I already was handicapped in the mind of a kid because I was imperfect. Yeah. But again, I think it's very well handled. It's sophisticated. They don't do the stock thing of making her like she's an antagonist because she presents a threat in like your conventional writing model. But she's not. It's the one time Disney/Pixar didn't like I miss villains being allowed to just be evil. But I also think this is so on the other positive side where you can show you can have characters who are antagonistic but they're not villains.
My favorite part of this, and I know you guys are gonna probably predict what I'm gonna say being the huge Stephen King fan here, you guys recognize the music when she's pushing that carriage?
Yeah, it's The Shining. Yeah. Right?
Yep.
Well, is it the carpet The Shining?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Did King ever do anything with possessed ventriloquist dummies?
I don't think so. The last time I remember Ventriloquist Dummy, Matt, was that episode of Buffy where They had the horny ass fucking dummy that was that actually.
Well, it also looks like they look like Mr. Chuckleteeth from the last season of X-Files.
Oh, good call. Absolutely, yeah.
Which I saw that as a grown ass man that said that needs to get the fuck away from me. But they're going around in her little push cart. I like how it's uneasy because you don't know what she wants because you have the precedent of the previous two movies.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, oh, like, looking at her and looking at Woody, they were probably made around the same time. And they both have voice boxes. And I said, uh-oh, here we go. This is kind of Ursula saying, I want your soul. And he says, like, you know, thanks, but no thanks. He basically manages to escape, but Forky is left behind. And Forky is basically taken prisoner. And again, I'm a little worried that we're just going to do the second one again, which we have to rescue the toy from, you know, this place that's like basically impenetrable.
And there is this entire antique store, every frame is a freeze and investigate mm-hmm. the Easter eggs. I can't talk about how gorgeous the opening was. The poor animators who had to make dust bunnies in this thing, man. Oh, this thing is glorious. And it feels like so many antique stores that I've walked through in so many places, albeit a little cleaner.
So Forky's held prisoner. Woody manages to escape. We cut to the rest of the toys wondering where Woody is, and they go to. So there's a road trip carnival, which we know those things are about as safe as, you know, walking down Interstate 95. And they say, all right, we got to basically hold the fort until Woody comes back. So Buzz takes it upon himself to go and, well, I say take it upon himself. His inner voice tells him to go do a rescue mission. He tries to go into the carnival to find any semblance of Woody. He gets knocked around again. These toys in this movie are pretty damn indestructible. They can fall from huge heights. They can hit all kinds of different objects and come up right side up. So apparently everyone got like rubber injections and implants in between 3 and 4.
I tell you, I would have saved my parents a lot of money if my toys were this indestructible. Because yeah, you're right. They take beatings and keep on ticking.
And Buzz gets grabbed by one of those guys who works at one of the, like, those side games. And he's placed on a prize wall. And we see a plush bunny and a plush ducky.
Okay. Before you get there, I have to mention that I thought this was Sid. But in looking at it, no. This is a character named Axel. He's played by Bill Hader, who I love the fact that he's the one who plays this character who has, like, two lines in this entire thing. But, yeah, I thought this was Sid at first. I had to look this up.
Sid's making good money. He's a waste disposal engineer. He's got a good job.
Yeah, he's making state money.
Well, that was never verified, so.
He's got a pension, baby.
Well, he probably does for all things being considered. And they also do, if you notice the ride, it's an octopus to make it look like the Whoopi Goldberg one.
I thought of that too. Yep.
Yeah.
From 3. So Buzz gets put on the wall. Meanwhile, Woody tries to break into the... I shouldn't say break into. He tries to get back to the RV, but he has to play dead because there's a group of campers who show up. And he's reintroduced to Bo, and they have to not move. But then they reunite, and she tells him that she's basically been doing, like, the island of misfit toys. Like, rescuing mm-hmm. toys that don't have owners and, you know, giving them purpose again in life. You know, one of them is voiced by Carl Weathers,
yes,
which I couldn't believe.
Come back, Carl.
You know, they drive around to this giant skunk.
Yes. Which I love.
And there's also Giggle McDimples is the character's name.
Okay. All right. This was one character too much. I feel like this is the Toy Story out of all of them that feels most derivative. Because we have a huge array of characters. We're going to have a big new one later, like coming up here pretty soon. And we have these two plush toys, Matt, which you've already mentioned. But Jesus fucking Christ, too many new characters in this thing.
There are too many characters, I'll give you. But this is Polly Pocket. So, nope, she's got to be here. This is just that quintessential toy. There's just too many other ones is the problem. But I like this little introduction here.
Well, my problem is that, as we're going to find out, we're going to have a set of characters shortly who are comic relief entirely. And she's also only here for comic relief.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you should have picked one or the other. And honestly, the duo were much bigger gets at the time than this actress.
No, the problem is that somebody, you know, said, let's do something redundant, and they kept copying their redundancy key. So we get redundancy on top of redundancy in this movie.
Well, if you also notice the Combat Carl, that's the toy Sid blew up in the first mm-hmm. one.
Mm-hmm.
Nice bit of continuity there. His arm is still stitched up and slightly bigger than the other one. Yep. So again, they've paid a lot of attention to the continuity. of these movies.
And I love the other two as well. Like, we have like Hoth Han. It looked like Han and Hoth.
And yeah, it's Yavin,
Hoth,
Endor.
Yes. Fun stuff.
See, everyone, I know a little about Star Wars. I can still remember those planets. But they also cut back to Forky and Gabby, where Gabby's talking about trying to get the scoop on Woody. So again, you're being led to believe she's going to have some like Machiavellian plan.
Mm-hmm.
But you can kind of tell it's not quite up to be, because she keeps seeing the, I guess, the granddaughter of the antique owner that keeps coming in. And she says, all I want to do is like go home with her. And she's got the book that has all the drawings that I guess go with that particular doll.
And did you recognize the mom, the voice?
No, I knew the grandmother was June Squibb. I recognize that.
The mom is Patricia Arquette, who I guess was supposed to have a bigger role, but after Stanton and everybody kind of rewrote this thing, her role got pretty narrowed down. But they went to her and they said, look, your role's not as big as we thought it was going to be. And she said, that's fine. I'm going to come anyway. I want to be a part of Toy Story. So yeah, she only has like 2-3 lines in this thing.
No, I honestly didn't catch that.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to Buzz being back on the shelf, and he's being derided by Statler and Waldorf. I mean, Ducky and Bunny.
Oh.
Voiced by Key and Peele. And this is after Jordan Peele had made Get Out and Us.
Yeah, this was 2 years after.
They had not done really anything together since their sketch show ended, and they did that movie Keanu, which is ironic given who else is in this movie. So comedy is very subjective. And obviously, like, this is the one thing, like, you have to break down quantifiably. Did you find it funny, yes or no? This is one of those instances where I feel like they let them improvise too much. And some of it I find very funny. Some of it is a bit grating.
Yeah, they were the other two. They were the other two that were, they recorded their lines together. And the two I mentioned earlier were Hanks and Annie Potts. Yeah, I want to make a very unfavorable comparison. These two reminded me of Mudflap and Skit. Every time they were on screen, I didn't like them. And you know what? Maybe it's just because I'm not a big Key and Peele fan, but they work my nerves really quick. And there are times when they, you know, they make up these scenarios that they're going to do, and I just wasn't laughing.
I remember seeing these two in the trailers, hearing that they were in it. I think they even had little like little vignettes showing the new characters before I ever saw the movie. And I was dreading these two because I was just, why? I don't like this type of random inclusion. I dig them for like 80% of the time that they're here. I think they work good together. And I think they're kind of a proper contrast as these carnival toys based in comparison to the regular toys we get. I dig Bunny and Ducky.
I'm with Adam. For the most part. But it's also weird that like they're not a get for the kids, because their stuff is not for young kids.
That's just the thing. Like, there are times in Toy Story where you can walk that line of being both for adults and kids, right? The kids can really love what's on screen while the adults are liking the sophistication behind it. There's no sophistication with these two.
Well, I think there is later on. There's something that is maybe the hardest I've laughed at a Pixar movie, because it caught me so off guard, but it's not coming up for a little while. But they're like those stereotypical prize fair plushies that you have to do really well at these games that are rigged to get. I'm sorry, these are like the child casinos where the house always wins.
See, the funniest part to me, for those that have been to Disneyland Resort, if you go to California Adventure, they have a boardwalk with boardwalk games. So you pay, you know, that massive amount to play and win these cheap ass toys. All they do is make them Disneyfied. So I mean, we've all been to fairs. You know, I'm so happy when you pop a balloon and get that reflective mirror with Def Leppard painted on the front of it. So this is, yeah, we grew up with, well, most of us, it was probably a little too old for Matt's time, grew up with these.
Kind of fairs. We had plenty of these traveling carnivals when I was a kid.
Well, okay. And as somebody who runs a resort that contains a fun center, I've seen these things run. And yeah, they are so fucking rigged. I got news for you people. Yeah, you put $5 in this machine, you're not getting it back.
Yeah, we got the game maker telling everyone it's rigged here on these airwaves. Now their casting and their character design does make me laugh in this instance. Around this time, Jordan Peele, he had directed Get Out and Us. Like, he had proven, he came out of nowhere. And they're literally still tied at the wrist. Like, this duo who did stuff together going all the way back to Mad TV, they're still joined together. And I find that kind of, like, self-reflective and humorous. It's like them almost kind of making fun of their... Because, like, King Michael Key, he's done a lot of work since. Like, he's been a steady working actor.
Yeah. I mean, if you get away, if you don't let his wife talk, he's actually pretty entertaining.
Oh, I think they're both, like, if you ever listen to Jordan Peele, like, talk about movies, he's like one of my favorite people to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a podcast I listen to called Movie Crypt that they've had him on twice. It's the same as Rob Zombie. Like, I can listen to Rob Zombie talk about movies all day. Watching one of his movies, like, don't get me to. But Jordan Peele is the same exact way, where I did not realize how much sophistication he actually had and how much he loves movies. And I can listen to him talk about them all day, but I'm not a huge fan of his movies. If we ever do a Peele retrospective, I would probably be the cynic on that one. I'm not a big Get Out fan. But all that being said, him in this movie, I'm not a big fan of it.
They're telling him, like, yeah, you're looking for a kid to shower you with unconditional love? Yeah, join the club. We've been up here forever. And we're probably never going to get down, because if you've ever tried to undo those zip ties, good fucking luck.
They grab them from underneath, because the ones they tie up never move.
Never move.
Bo reunites with Buzz and the gang. Oh, well, I shouldn't say all the gang. It's just Buzz. And they're like, okay, we got to break into this antique store. What do we do? So they sneak in. And if you notice, there's like a Nemo scuba mask from A Bug's Life.
Yep.
You see the grape soda bottle cap from Up. That Bo Peep at one point. So a lot of like little Pixar references here and there walking around this antique store. So they do the Scooby-Doo thing of, we're going to split up and look for clues, where Bonnie and Woody go off to recruit someone who we'll talk about shortly, and Buzz, Ducky, and Bunny fantasize about getting a key, so they do three fantasy sequences. The first two I didn't really laugh at. The third one killed me because they made you wait for it. The fact they follow her to the house, she goes through her nighttime routine, and there's that shot of them just standing over the bed. I don't know why, it just killed me. And then they cut to Tim Allen just going, yeah, we're not doing that. And then they realize they have all these elaborate plans, and she literally just drops the keys in front of them.
Yeah. Of course, Key and Peele going after the key. This is, ugh.
What I love about this is we've talked for three movies about the rules with the toys.
Yeah.
And it's almost self-referential enough that they're going to, you know, do a play on it. So I have fun with it. I roll my eyes a little bit, but it does make me smile. But that third one, because it sets up the bit, it pays off.
And even the other characters like, all right, how long is this going to keep going? And they're like, shh. But like I said, humor is very subjective. But they're trying to rescue Forky, and it kind of sort of goes up in smoke because they have to. I could not believe. Now this I don't know if it was kept secret because he's in the marketing, but they go to recruit this Evel Knievel stand-in to the point where they sued over his likeness.
Yes, they did. His estate sued their asses.
Freaking. We had Duke Kaboom, voiced by Keanu Reeves, who gives more energy in this than he's ever given in a feature film.
The three of us did John Wick last year. 2019 was such a year for him because he did this. He had John Wick, like, I think, like, within the month or so of this movie's release, right? And then he had Fortnite that same year. Like, he had a moment in 2019. I think he's okay in this. I do think it's, again, it's another thing that's just kind of played a little. I did not care about Rajon and all. Like, one story too many. It's always fun seeing Keanu in a movie, but it's just played a little too much.
What I love the most about this is reading or watching the behind the scenes where they're just like, yeah, we thought Keanu would be good because we were like Canadian actor, so we brought him in and he wanted to do it. So then we pick him up and he shows up at Pixar and he's got like a notebook delving into this character. Is he mad at Rajon? How does he feel about this? What's his impetus for that? And we had to rewrite a script around Keanu Reeves' notes for what he was bringing to the character.
Yeah, and all the things where he's like, he does a lot of things throughout the course of his improv where he kind of gives little things here and there, like when he's moving his legs up or whatever, and they had to animate that because that was not in the script. He did so many things that really caught them off guard.
But I have fun with Duke Kaboom so much, and I remember being in parks and seeing shirts with Yes I Canada all over it.
Oh my God.
And I had the Evel Knievel toy, so this is such a throwback to me, and they work just as well as Duke Kaboom does.
See, I remember that as well, and I did like the comparison of that commercial to the Evel Knievel thing, because I think the Evel Knievel toy, didn't it come with a parachute, Adam?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Yep.
And kids did throw a fit over it, and it was kind of the end when you realized that this crap doesn't work.
Yeah, it's the definition of false advertising.
Well, yeah. We talked about He-Man, where I love those toys so much, but those commercials made those toys so amazing because those kids had the most amazing backyards. And once you get the toys, you don't have that same background. It's a little different.
It goes back to that very first one where Buzz is watching the commercial and it says, not a flying toy.
Yes.
And he realizes who he is. And Duke Kaboom has that when his on Christmas morning, he's played with for like 5 minutes and then he's abandoned. But they go into this place.
It's Boxing Day.
That's right. It is Boxing Day. That
specifically say it's Boxing Day, which I guess Trey Parker and Matt Stone wrote part of this movie with all the jabs at Canada.
But I do like that it when they go into the place where the club, quote unquote, that it's tin toy that even opens, that box.
Yes.
Yeah. So that they threw it all the way back to Pixar's creation was those are the good little moments you can do in this shot.
That's a nice Easter egg. I agree.
Yeah, and they keep in continuity that toy doesn't speak in that short, so he just clinks and clanks and guides him. It's basically the cantina from Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, that was my note as well, Matt, is this is straight-up cantina to the point where I think they even play some music notes from it as well. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
Is basically a Jedi with all of the moves. No, I'm just saying that, like, clearly there is a Star Wars influence because, like, that cane, that staff she has is about as powerful and indestructible as a lightsaber. And she could, like, you know, all these ninja moves. And
that's the weird thing about Bo Peep in this. Isn't she made of, like, porcelain? Like, she's kind of indestructible. Yeah,
she's porcelain.
Yeah.
She is. But it seems like sometimes they forget to animate her as porcelain because her look changes a few times throughout the movie.
I agree.
Enough that I'm put off a little bit by it. Same thing with Woody. Sometimes it's just, and maybe it's because they worked on it with different teams or different years because of how long these take, but it doesn't all match up.
And I like how it's, again, the first one, instead of a dog, it's a cat that they call Dragon.
Oh my God, that fucking cat.
As a cat person, I finally get my due, and yeah, they could be little bitches.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, that's one of ours as well. I thought of our. Oh man, and I love how feared that cat is by these toys. It's kind of funny, like we talked about like Chopper in Stand By Me, where it's kind of that same thing where this cat is so feared, but in the end it's not as destructive as they thought it was.
Well, it gets dark because the cat eats one of the toys, and yeah. I thought that was it for her. I was kind of like, oh, we're gonna start calling the herd finally because they realized we have too many characters. But once they escape the cake store, they're like, you're going back for Forky? Are you insane? Like, it's like we barely made it out of there alive, and you want us to go back? And we realize that Woody can't handle not being the center of attention.
See, and that's what I love about this. He flat out admits, because it's all he knows. It's all he can do. And I think Hanks plays that very well, very different than I've ever heard Woody have a line delivered. This is a huge moment for him, and it's setting up what we're going to see at the very end here.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes back in and he threatens Gabby with a friggin' pencil.
Yes.
And if you also notice, like, when she walks towards him, like, she separates herself from the dummies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like the also final hint that she's, like, not evil. And she tells, like, the previous two movies were toys with good facades that turned out to be bad. This one, it's a nice toy who was misconstrued to be bad because of, like, a design flaw. And she's like, can you give me that one thing that, you know, I've never had that it's all you've known. And I like that he willingly gives her the voice box.
Okay.
And they treat it like he's on the freaking operating table with the sewing machine.
Yeah. Here's the weird thing about this. This movie, and I got to get into this. This came out 2 years after the Me Too movement, right? This is a man giving his power to a woman. In the end, we're going to realize that it's not going to really make a difference. But Matt, did you kind of read into that where it's kind of like, we're kind of moving on from the last 3 years and we're kind of going on to a more diversified future?
No, I read it as giving a kidney to someone.
Okay.
Or something like that. I didn't read on the gender thing as much as like donating something to help someone else. Or you could read it as someone towards like an older person, like sacrificing part of themselves for a younger person so they could experience life. Like, I think it's a little bit more literal. And it would have been odd to do that given what we know about John Lasseter.
And that's what I'm saying, is that now the females have the power, not Lasseter. Adam, did you read that at all?
I didn't. What I read this as was these two people separately coming together to try to create a baby.
Oh, Interesting.
That, like, I took this as, like, I look, I know this is way out there, but because Gabby Gabby's just, and I don't want to use the word defective because I think that's offensive to any person who can't have a child, but that's what she calls herself. So these two together are going to, through the magic of science, are going to hopefully have a child together. And what's brilliant is it doesn't work out. And what the end result is for her is just like that shit. It took me down a road I never expected. Mm-hmm. But that's how I take this. This is somebody who's either given up, you know, or donating his innards, donating his stuff to be able to help you conceive a child.
And we get the thing that kind of shocked me in a movie that I found to be largely predictable, when she gets picked up by the granddaughter and just thrown down. Like, that shocked me and gut punched me in a way I was not expecting.
Same.
Thought what we were going to get, I thought, because she plays with the names a little bit, I thought it was going to be that she'd been waiting there since the mother was a child. So I thought it was the mother that, you know, she was really, you think it's the kid, but it's not. But yeah, the way this happens, she thinks that she's got everything she's wanted and it doesn't happen. And I was just like, oh, I get it.
You know, this is kind of, like I said, it was a real gut punch. I felt real empathy for her, which shocked me. And then, unfortunately, the movie kind of loses focus for the next 10 minutes and it turns into chaotic nonsense because they have all these other toys and they've done nothing with them. They have to hijack the RV and now it's just like comical hijinks.
Okay. All right, this is
to get them back to the carnival.
Yeah, this is where I start turning on it, because there is such a golden opportunity here. Because earlier in the film, in fact, the very beginning of the film, Bonnie takes the badge off Woody and puts it on Jesse. The very end of this movie, Woody is going to give the power of the toys to Jesse and say that they are yours now. Why not have her take control of this situation? Why have Buzz do this? This came out of nowhere, and the movie, this is the only time in the course of this series where I think it loses focus, and I think we're going for hijinks as opposed to an end story here, because you have to set up Jesse as the person who's going to take these toys over. Instead, we're just having hijinks for the sake of hijinks, and it makes what Woody does at the very end of this less powerful, because Jesse is going to take the mantle without giving her the legs to do so.
Yeah, I felt that the action scene we had a little bit ago went on way too long inside the store. And I feel this one is here just because you got to make this one a little more kid friendly and give the kids something to laugh at in the theater. But it's not great. I don't like that it breaks the rules that have been established for three films, because I think these things are way too moving and just way too animated around humans. You're a hair's breadth from breaking the rules. So I just it goes a little too far. I'm glad it's not longer, but it goes from silly to overboard real quick.
And the three, I know the two of you have also used GPS. I would know if my voice had changed, if my GPS.
I'm an Eagle Scout. You think I would succumb to that nonsense? I'd find my own way.
All right.
Mine just recently changed. Bleep you, Android Auto.
Okay. All right, you two fucking big dicked fucking assholes. I use GPS a lot, and I would know if the voice had changed on my fucking GPS. The fact that this fucking dad, played by Jay Hernandez, by the way, which caught me off guard, is not fucking stunned by the fact that this GPS has changed and is making him go into different directions, fucking also pissed me off.
Well, I also don't like that it's redoing the second one with the toys taking over a vehicle.
Yeah, but there, at least they were...
No, but that's what I'm saying. I like it in the second one because they're doing everything themselves.
Yeah.
And the parents in this are completely... The parents have been dumbed down in this movie, which is the problem of, by making them more involved, the internal logic of the movie gets harder to defend, of no one noticing the toys actually, like, being sentient.
Too much adult in this.
Especially because they're making the unicorns, like, I want to put the dad in prison, which is kind of a dark joke for...
Yeah.
That does make me laugh, though.
I love Buttercup.
And I again, this one, I keep reminding myself, it's not Seth Rogen. It's the guy from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And they manage, like, Woody and company managed to have Duke Kaboom do the giant jump to make the line. The father thinks he's going to get arrested because they try to pull him over. Again, the cops would have just shot out the tires by this point, but...
No, he's white.
Again, like, it's too... I didn't want to say it, but... Well, you can tell he's white because they told him to step out of the car. And they just cuff him right there. And again, the thing that got me is the freaking, you cut to the girl crying, and it's, they use that as the way to get Gabby to a kid.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. And okay, this, of all the things in this, this hit me so hard because they're going away. Gabby's joined them. She's found some place to be. And then she sees this kid. To me, this is the adoption moment. She's leaving the toys. She's going to put herself at risk one more time. She's going to leave herself open one more time for this child that's abandoned. And oh my gosh. I mean, Matt, you're a parent. You Garrett, you got stepkids. I mean, this just, man, this one right here hit me.
Oh, I was like Adam at the end of last week's show. I was sitting there. I had to leave the room. My kids were paying attention. I got up and left, blew my nose, came back. But it was the are you sure when they asked her. And it was also the kid, which is every parent's worst fear, losing your kid at an event like this. And you putting yourself in your kid's thoughts of like, I don't know where my parents are. I have to go talk to this cop. All this got me. Not just because when I was 3 years old, I was lost at a water park by my stepfather, but that's a conversation for another day.
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun... If I ever get shit-faced enough, I'll tell that story on the air. Okay. But they create the literal, the line for them to cross over, but Woody kind of hesitates. And he says, I don't know if I can do this, and fuck, I'm going to turn to Adam from last week. The greatest line reading Tim Allen will probably ever have in his life is when he says, Bonnie will be okay.
Well, this is why I say Buzz is essential to this film, because only Buzz is the one who can get Woody to do this. Because don't forget, I think this is closing their arc as well. These two who were introduced to themselves in an antagonistic way in the first film are now the one who is antagonized against in that film is telling Woody she'll be okay. And Woody thinks that he means Bo Peep, but no, he means Bonnie. And yeah, I'm with you, Matt. This got me too. Just thinking about it is also giving me a little misty eye. Just talking about it. It's a pretty big, pretty huge moment. And apparently this was a bigger scene in the script. And Hanks was like, no, 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 no. We don't need it to be like a 4 or 5 minute scene. Just these two lines works. And he's absolutely right. This hit me hard.
Yeah, I mean, we saw them before let their kids go off to college and what that meant. And now it's, I did my job for my kids. I've done my duty. I did it. Now what? And I got to tell you, at this point in my life, wow. Freaking wow. I'm not done, but wow.
And it's that, like, you know, the acceptance part of being ready to move on. Not just from your own personal, but your partner or your spouse or your friend giving you the confirmation mm-hmm. that it's okay to do so. Mm-hmm. And they use that freaking infinity and beyond line so perfectly.
Yep.
It's this innocuous phrase. He says that to him as they're leaving. It's such a great way to end the movie. And honestly, this got me in a way that the third one did not.
Yeah, it didn't get me as hard as last week. Last week, I was a mess. This week, I did have a few tears, but I got to say, there is a lot of hugging at the end of this. Like, what he
does. Oh, yeah, this is like the end of The Wizard of Oz.
Where yes. It's
like, I'm going to miss you most of all, Scarecrow. And they're all like,
which is really awkward given that the way Lasser was ousted out of this company. But nonetheless, I did get a little bit misty-eyed at this, but even though I'm not near retirement age as much as I would love to be and don't have kids that I'm sending off to college like Adam does, I did feel this a lot just because I've gone through these four journeys with these characters.
And it's the ironic thing of like the lost toy, which has a negative disclaimer associated with it, gave him like new purpose, mm-hmm. ironically.
Yeah, and I feel that Bo Peep was that parent who went through stuff earlier. You know, she had her toy earlier than the other ones did. She got to go off and live her life as an adult before the other ones. She's that grown person that already had a life outside of her toys, her kids. And it's smart, especially so to
saying,
have her be a single
you're
woman.
This is like it's like Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine and Jaws 4.
pretty much. I mean, yeah.
But once again, I am leaving this theater and I'm thinking, God damn, this is the perfect way to end this. There's nothing you could do. But that's why we have started this series this year.
Well, not before we get some end credit scenes. Mostly it's like them rescuing toys. Like they rescue more of the plushes that are hung up. You got a fantasy sequence with Ducky and Bunny attacking the guy who strung them up.
Yeah that's when I turned Godzilla. It off. Yeah.
Like a Godzilla parody. I thought that was because it came out of nowhere.
Yes, but... this exists for nothing but some happiness and joy, so Garrett turns it off.
Well, it's also like, again, like, because 3 ends with a big musical number after the credits because they don't want you leaving in tears. So they're kind of like a built-in defense mechanism to let you compose yourself before you leave. And I wasn't like that when I left the theater. Mm-hmm. Garrett, if you remember when we reviewed this, first time we did it, I wasn't that blown away by it. But look, lots changed in my life. It's been 7 years And
of course, last time, I mean, all we thought about was the fact that we had to end this with Ken Reeves going, whoa. And now this movie
takes... Do you have laser eyes? Whoa.
Yeah, this movie takes a whole new meaning as opposed to that. And by the way, Jen was laughing her ass off at that scene. She loved that scene.
She loves Keanu.
Oh, yeah, she does.
But look, let's see if we're much more, I don't want to say forgiving, but... more positive than we were initially, but we'll save us for last. Let's go to the newbie. Adam, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you give Toy Story 4?
It's amazing that we can mention the score at the beginning of this and ignore it the whole time, because that's kind of what Newman did as well. I was a little apprehensive going back to this one, because my opinion on 3 had gotten so much brighter and better. I still had issues with it, but man, 3, when I went back to it, resonated with me, and it had aged so much better than I thought. And because of that, I thought I was going to come down on this, and maybe my rose-tinted glasses were gonna let me see more clearly. What they did was let me see this movie in a different way, and I appreciate it differently, but I still love this movie, and I think it holds some truths for a lot of people, like most of these Toy Story movies do, and it'll hit you at whatever level you're coming to it at. The acting throughout this is really good. I never would have thought at the beginning of this year you would tell me that I'm going to review Madeline McGraw in 2 different movies, but if you remember, go back to Black Phone 2, but we're discussing her again. That's the voice of Bonnie.
Well, 3 if you count Scream 7.
Oh my God, you're right. Oh, we get her 3 times this year. But the additional voices of Christina Hendricks and Keanu Reeves and Key and Peele, they bring something to the movie without overtaking it. The downside is some of the other toys are around for nothing more than hanging out in the background or 1 or 2 lines here and there. But the shift to protecting your toy, to getting them off to go, to what does it mean for you after your child has grown, after you've done your job, is big. The story that this tells is resonant, it hits, and I love it for that. The animation, I mean, it is top tier. This thing is animated, amazingly gorgeous. It's the camera pans they use, the lighting they use, the motion, the little details are amazing throughout. And I can't say it's a better ending to 3, I used to say this was the better ending, and I don't know if I can say that anymore, but it hits me just as well, and it is a deserved ending 7 years after the ending that, or 9 years after the ending of Toy Story 3. So at a different point in your life, you're looking at it differently, and that's how I am for these movies as well. It's extremely well done. I don't know why you would make another one other than that B that you had for the box office of this one. But I'm really looking forward to discussing another one, even if I'm not looking forward to watching it, because I'm at the end of the day, they haven't let me down. Every time I think they're going to, they pull me back in and they surprise me and leave me with tears. And Toy Story 4 did it as well. This is an 8. It's a good time. There's little things here and there to not like, but it doesn't overstay its welcome. And I think whoever you are coming in, you'll find a piece of yourself here with the toys. 8 on 10.
8 on 10 for something that none of us really needed. But Garrett, do you share any sentiment?
3 on 10. This thing sucked. No. You know, this was an interesting rewatch for me because I remember laughing more at this than I had at at least the previous one. And I remembered kind of turning on it until the very end. When I look at this film now, I can't help but just think of them saying goodbye to Woody is them saying goodbye to John Lasseter, because Woody was a creation of John Lasseter. They are moving on from Woody. They are moving on from John Lasseter. The question is, how are they going to get there? Well, we got to get Bo Peep. Bo Peep is the one who can get him to go. And they have to contrive a way to get to that point. Now, in coming back, that's all I remembered about it. In watching how the events unfold here and seeing the themes on display throughout the course of this, as far as grandparenting and retiring and everything that they bring up here, it's glorious. And the ending of this, it didn't get me as much as 3 did, but it got me more than I was expecting. And I remember when I watched this initially, I put on my letterbox, the thing I said was, how the hell do these inanimate objects get me to get emotional and have tears in my eyes each and every time? However, I will say there are a few too many characters here. There's a little too much of the hijinks that I expect more from when it comes to Toy Story. I don't expect Toy Story to kind of not just break the rules, but shatter the rules, which they do at the end of this. And that kind of makes me turn on it a little bit. And unlike you two, I found the Key and Peele characters to just be annoying as hell. All that being said, though, that could just me being the grumpy Gus that I am when it comes to these movies. And I feel that Toy Story is a treasure commodity from Pixar, and they had to be careful with this because there was a danger of this being looked at as, well, what can you do with 4 other than, as Adam said, make that $1 billion. They made the $1 billion. It's not as good as 3, but it's damn close. I'm giving this a solid 7. It's a very solid 7. There's a lot to really like here, but I just feel there's too many hijinks and too many characters. 7/10 for Toy Story 4.
This is one of those instances where I'm actually happy we're doing a retrospective over again. Because in some of these cases, I have had to go through and either not formulate a new opinion or feel like I'm just going through the motions again. I think this is one of the rare instances where seeing something a second time with a considerable passage of time, you know, 7 years is a long time, especially by Hollywood standards, and me being where I'm at now versus where I was back then, combined with the subject matter of the movie, there was a lot more here that I responded to than I did when I first saw it. And that was probably the most shocking thing in retrospect, no pun intended, of comparing my thoughts then versus now. That not only did I find this to be a worthy installment, when this very well could have just been like an epilogue that people would say, oh, you could watch 1 through 3 and then skip 4, which, as Tarantino has already done, so that platform exists. But I look at this as an important piece of the puzzle. Like, now I don't look at this as a trilogy. This is a quadrilogy now. And I think they earned it. And that's equally impressive because those are harder to find consistent quality in than even trilogies. Like, you can count on one hand the amount of great trilogies. Quadrilogies, not a whole lot. And this is it's another chapter. It's not wholly disconnected from the previous 3. Even if you remove the callbacks and the flashbacks at the beginning, it's advancing the story. And by the time this was done, I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm ready for number 5. I thought this was probably my second favorite of the 4. I would go 2 and then this, which is amazing because I thought this was the weakest of the 4 when we recorded this initially back at the old place. And I don't think it's just because I'm older and more stuff connected with me. I think it's the fact they actually had a story to tell. And I didn't feel like, unlike 3, my biggest criticism was large chunks of it felt like more of the same and just moving different toys around, but still telling the same story. And I have to give it praise also, they made a goddamn spork work for me. Again, it feels like, Garrett, to your point, something that they came up with stoned out of their mind saying, oh yeah, Jordan Belfort saying, sell me this pen. Sell this spork to millions of people, and goddamn, it worked. So I'm giving this a very enthusiastic 8/10, and I'm as surprised as anybody. But before we get to number 5, ladies and gentlemen, we have another piece of business to get into, because I should remind everyone, there is a movie in this continuity, sorry for the rhyme, that came out, and nobody seems to remember it, not just because it was the pandemic. There is a Buzz Lightyear movie called Lightyear. A spinoff came out in 2022 that centers on the character that inspired the toy. And apparently that inspiration didn't translate to box office success, because for the first time in this franchise, we got ourselves a bomb, ladies and gentlemen. Garrett, I assume you've never seen this movie.
This will be a first time watch for me. I was ready to watch it when we had moved here and we were thinking about doing it and that continuity. But once again, those plans fell through. You know what? I've heard not many good things about this movie, but I have no idea what to expect. So yeah, this will be a first time viewing. And I, for the first time, I'm going into a Toy Story movie completely cold.
All right, Adam, this movie's kind of been a punching bag between you and me in conversation because we both saw it. But let remind audiences, did you see this in the theater or did you just not give a flying fuck?
No, I only know about this film. I haven't actually seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it either?
I know way too much about this film for having not seen it, but my kids didn't want to see it. My wife didn't want to see it. And I was not going to see this on my own. But when you got two kids who look at me and go, yeah, we love Toy Story and we don't want to go see this movie. This failed to launch at my household.
Yeah, this was to infinity and home video. Because this did not, or to infinity and Disney Plus, because this thing was in theaters. Parts of it were formatted for IMAX and it barely made back its budget, but you have to make twice it to break even, so it's a bomb. It was made for $200, made $226. Part of it was also the, you didn't have Tim Allen voicing Buzz Lightyear in this. It's Chris Evans. And again,
it's
like
Chris Evans?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not Tim Allen.
Yeah, it's Captain Lightyear.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so he picked up the shield and put on a laser. But I don't know if this movie ever would have done, like, independent of coming out during still the tail end of the pandemic as we remember it, because it was 2022. I don't think that was the only reason why this movie didn't do well, because I think the marketing for this, if you could accuse Toy Story 4 of having bad marketing, this movie had very limited marketing from what I can remember. It was like the same footage over and over. And I, like I said, it just didn't, it felt like a placeholder until they actually got with number five. It was like they took the Toy Story of Terror idea and said, let's do it for, do a feature out of it and make it kind of like a spinoff and kind of pat ourselves in the back. And I thought it was going to be a prequel in the sense of explaining like the lore of the toy itself, but I just had no desire to go see it. But I still went because I was curious, and I'm kind of a Pixar completionist in a lot of ways.
I know you are.
But all things being as they are, I came out. I have thoughts, but given how I don't want to say how much my opinion changed from four to now, I wonder if this is going to have the same effect for me. But I, it's going to be weird watching this for the first time with both of you. Because Adam mentioned he knows a little bit more than he probably should, given he's never seen it. Garrett, you know next to nothing about this, right?
Correct.
Clearly, because you didn't even know Chris Evans was the voice.
Yeah. That should tell you all you need to know. I'm coming just as cold to this as I did for the last few Scream movies. I have no idea what I'm getting into, other than I know it wasn't received too well.
Well, but we'll make for a very animated discussion, no pun intended. But we got two more movies. We got this, and then we got an actual Toy Story 5. So we have more to discuss, and then we'll probably talk about if there's going to be a Toy Story 6, and if that will ever come to pass. By that time, we'll be, God, I don't want to think about how long that's going to be. But until next week, when we review Lightyear, I am not a toy. I was made for soups, salads, maybe chili, and then a podcast. Freedom. Talk next week.
I'm going to have some words with this lily pad and let her know how things are run around here.
Try to stay calm, Jesse.
Buzz, you know me. I'm the definition of calm.
That's not going to work.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Good job, troops.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
Let's go home.
I'm glad I got to see you again.
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as Star Wars, the Pirates of the Caribbean film series, Indiana Jones, Masters of the Universe, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Beetlejuice films, the Planet of the Apes franchise, the Incredibles films, and so much more.
I don't believe that man's ever been to medical school.
I was listening. I'm always listening.
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Ah, that went well.
It's good to see them fighting again.
It sure is.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
You have saved our lives. We are eternally grateful.
Come on, I'm not lying down on the job.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, and Dave.
You would not believe what I've been through tonight.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
You got a lot to look forward to, folks.
Scheduling done by Matt.
My hero!
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Potato Head, Mr. and Mrs. Here. Trikus, check, 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 check.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2026, and any and all music, movie, and sound clips are used for entertainment purposes and review only.
You still worried?
About Andy? Nah. It'll be fun while it lasts.
I'm proud of you, cowboy.
Besides, when it all ends, I'll have old Buzz Lightyear to keep me company. For infinity and beyond.
Yeah, the anger, I shouldn't say anger, maybe jealousy behind.
I'd say envy.
Envy. Yeah, there you go. The envy of Lasseter not being involved with three is kind of what got this going.
Good for the goose, good for the gander, and it worked gangbusters for both.
Yeah, they both made a lot of money.
They both did, although this one got a sequel where Child's Play, at least the remake, I don't think we're going to see any future adventures of Mark Hamill voicing that character, not just because he can't stay the fuck off Twitter.
He's had a couple days, that's for sure.
Not to date when we're recording this particular show.
Yeah.
But, people don't, you know, people did not read what he wrote.
Speaking of things we wrote, I have not.
And I can listen to him talk about him all day, but I'm not a huge fan of his movies. If we ever do a Peele retrospective, I would probably be the cynic on that one. I'm not a big Get Out fan. But all that being said, him in this movie, I'm not a big fan of it.
Well, my hot take is that I think Nope is his best movie, and that's the one people like the least. It's like when Shyamalan made Signs.
See, people I haven't seen Nope.
I love Nope.
See, but that's one, Garrett, go watch it knowing nothing. Don't read anything. Don't look it up. Just watch it. Go in blind.
See, I heard something I've heard over and over, in that it's a tribute to the old Spielberg films. I'm like, I don't want to.
It's not. It's okay. Not.
All right. I'll probably watch it after I watch Lightyear this week.
Like, people just say that about anything, given the material, they'll associate it with Spielberg.
Okay.
Hi, toys.